Hello, everyone, and welcome into the preview for the 2025 Champions Cup. I'm joking, Trav. This is the OTB Open.
Oh, my goodness.
We'll react to that news that this is going to be the course of Champions Cup Monday on Grip Locked. But let's just say the PDGA has went back on their decision once with Champions Cup. Hopefully they can do it again.
That's right.
Swenson Park, though, is a really fun course. It's a golf course out there. It's a beautiful course. That intro hopefully doesn't knock anything about this course. It's just not a really tight wooded course, which is what Champions Cup has become to know. But it's a golf course, lots of OB. One thing that kind of sets this golf course apart is their use of the low ceilings on a lot of the tee shots, a lot of the approach shots. That's why, if you remember, a few years ago when it first came on tour, it kind of became known as the roller course to a certain extent. That was the year Eagle McMahon won. Last year when Emerson Keith won, he did it not really throwing that many rollers. Aaron Gossage, however, did. So you will still see quite a bit of rollers, but that's kind of what is unique about this course is a lot of the low ceiling, and then down the stretch, it brings the water into play a lot more. To be frank, the front nine is kind of boring, not that memorable. A lot of similar-looking tee shots and similar-looking greens. The back nine gets interesting. That's when baskets get closer to the water comes into play a lot more, a lot more scenic. Overall, very, very nice course. An interesting change I noticed here is actually on hole nine, if we can bring that T sign up, they have two different pin locations, which is interesting. Mm-hmm. I love the idea here because they're going to be playing the shorter par four pin in round one and two, and they're going to be playing a longer par five pin. In round one and three, the shorter pin, the longer pin in round
and
two.
They're changing the par?
They're changing the par from a four to
That's
a five
because
it makes it get to like a thousand-some foot par five. So almost nullifies the change with the thing. What's interesting to me isn't that they're doing that. I think more courses should. It's they're only doing it on one hole.
Yeah, well,
I went through the whole caddy book. It's just one hole.
I think what's interesting is that they're changing the entire par of the course with one swing.
Yeah.
Like, I think it's, and I don't necessarily have a problem with that. I've never really considered that because I always think about, you know, we talk about courses moving pins would be great. You know, you've got a hole that brings water into play. Okay, maybe on round one and round three, you want it to be further away from the water, more attackable. And then on the final days and the second round, you want it to be closer to the water. Like, it's not super hard to implement that at least once, maybe twice on the course. Changing the whole par is interesting. We'll see kind of how each layout plays and what we think. Because I think when you change the entire hole, though, to that extent, what's going to happen is you're just going to have people being like, well, one hole was better than the other.
Yeah.
I think the pin change is normally more subtle. But, hey, I'm okay with trying it. I think it's a fun idea. I wish more courses did this. I think, like, it's not super labor intensive, and especially when you're using temp baskets, you know?
Yeah.
And so I think that especially is like, why I almost, like, if I was running a tournament, if I was using temp baskets with a big old wheel attached to them, especially, it's like, how could I not have two different pins? Like, I would just, like, have so many ideas, I feel like, and it's like, why not?
Yeah, no, absolutely. It definitely is something I would have liked to have seen on more holes.
Yeah.
Realistically, that's, but maybe it's just
super
a testing
easy.
Name. It is also the change of par. My concern would be, now both holes seem like they're gonna play kind of tough, but like, let's just say for this scenario that the par four was like, okay, I can definitely birdie the par four, and we move to a par five, and let's say it wasn't eagleable, I haven't seen it, then it might just be a wash.
Yeah.
Like, it was a birdieable par four, it's a birdieable par five. They score the same.
Yeah.
So what was the point? We just added the throw into the round. I don't know. But it'll be interesting to see overall. The one stat that came from Edwin's stats about this course that I found that I just wasn't aware of is in 2023, this was actually the longest course on tour with the average feet per par stroke coming in at 171 feet, beating out Glendevere, which we will see at the Portland Open, I do believe, by 1 foot. So you have Swenson Park, which is what we're playing here, at 171 feet per par stroke. Then you have Glendevere at 170, and then Toboggan at 169. Essentially the same, but it is the longest.
Well, and the interesting thing about this, you look at this past winners, you know, Simon and Eagle getting wins, not surprising, big arms, long course. But then Emerson Keith, who doesn't throw short, but is certainly not one of the biggest arms on tour, kind of defying the odds and smushing that narrative immediately. And it's because of the fact that you utilize the low ceilings, you bring the roller into play. There are other ways to get around this course than just airing out huge shots. I know people see golf course, they immediately just think, here comes a Heiser Fest. Sure, there's going to be some repetitive shots at times, but I think that some of these courses have figured it out. You know, we'll see it soon at Glendevere in Portland. I think they've done a good job as well of utilizing trees, even if it's just in the tee area. This is something that Wild Horse has done on a few of their holes as well. If you can force the ceiling low, you know, even if it's just surrounding the tee, you have to throw a low shot. You're not going to get the disc to travel upwards. You're not going to throw an air bounce.
Well, you can. It just won't go far.
Yeah, it won't go very far. So it is easy to keep those shots down and control the distance that way. That's when the roller comes into play. I still think that big arms are going to have a field day out here, but you can't write off everybody because Isaac Robinson also played really well at this event last season.
Yeah, the way Edwin's stats put it, I actually really like. He said, Emerson Keith popped off for a surprising win last year, but this tournament is typically led by the chalk, including Calvin, Ricky, and the Crush Boys.
Yeah.
And Emerson Keith last year, I was watching the coverage again this morning. I was watching the Jomez coverage, and Yuli kind of phrased it this way, that Emerson, day-to-day, is not a crusher. Yeah. But every once in a while, he'll have a weekend where his timing is perfect, and then he's capable of pushing that 500-plus.
Yeah.
And he said, this is his weekend. Mm-hmm. And he was right. Like, it looked like Emerson was just effortlessly getting discs out to places that were just way out there that you would have thought that's out of Emerson Keith's range. But last weekend, or last year on this weekend, it just was his weekend.
Did he have a kid, though, right before the event? Did he have the baby power bump?
He did. But not this time. Not this time.
Okay, last year. Yeah. That's a big factor. That's a big factor to consider.
Yeah, the extra oomph of dad's
That's
strength.
Right. That's
but,
right.
But, you know, I haven't quite seen this yet. I don't know. You're too into this. I don't know if dad's strength gets stronger or wears off over time. So, like...
it has to get stronger because the more children you have, the more you have to carry at the same time.
And they're getting heavier. So, therefore, Emerson Keith should be throwing farther this year.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, he should be even more of a favorite.
No doubt.
A year into having more kids.
No doubt.
To think about as we get into storylines, let's just focus on Emerson here.
Ember Daddy.
Do we actually, let's get real, was it just his weekend, or is it something about this course and him?
Anytime we talk about these kind of like one-off winners, and Emerson, you know, he picks his moments. He's had a few solid wins and finishes throughout his career. He pops up from time to time. I think when he first started emerging on the scene, I think he had some really good finishes at Worlds that were pretty close. You know, he kind of would show up here and there. People really had him on their radar as like the next big thing. You know, way back in the day, Foundation ran a disc with him at that point.
Emerson Keith, the
Judge.
Armadillo Judge.
Incredible. I have
the
two
Texas
of them.
Armadillo was his nickname.
Yeah. Yeah, great nickname. We got to like...
Where did that go?
Well, because Ember Daddy is also
Texas
incredible.
Armadillo, I think, might be better.
But it's definitely up there. But... you know, I think he's kind of just become a very spotty player now, like you were saying. And at this event, you have to like him a little bit. You know, it's like we've said this a few times, like with a guy like this, you like him a little bit because he did win the event last year. There's always going to be those positive vibes and familiarity with the course. But it doesn't just mean that you can just all of a sudden be like, oh, yeah, he's top three, like for sure. Like you still got to get through all these incredible golfers who a course like this looks like a clean slate to them. They can just do anything on it.
Yeah. Well, there's OB on this course, you know, when you do get off the fairway.
Yeah.
But a lot of the fairways offer a pretty wide range, a pretty wide landing zone. There's a few that get really tight, but on those wide landing zones, like if you're a crusher, as long as you hit the height right, mm-hmm. there's not really much penalty for how far you're going. So, I do think this was just his weekend last year. I don't necessarily think this course super lines up for his game in any way, shape, or form that it doesn't for other players. Mm-hmm. I think what's against him this year is two players that this course does line up really well for. Actually, three players that this course lines up really well for are having a phenomenal start to the season, being Gannon Burke, Calvin Heimberg, and Anthony Barella.
Yeah.
All have previously done well out here, mm-hmm. and they're having themselves a great start to the season. We'll talk about them in a little bit here, because last year, if you remember this, if you don't, I'll give you a refresher. Aaron Gossage more or less had this in the bag. He was up by a few strokes. He seemed in control, and he kept giving himself close putts. Not a problem until it was. Down the stretch, those close putts became a very big problem, and he would have par looks turn into double bogeys, birdies turn into bogeys multiple times, missing multiple inside C1X putts. Aaron Gossage has really popped off this season at a few different events, and we've seen him kind of get into contention. His putting, when it's on, is on. We haven't necessarily seen him in those clutch moments like we saw last year crack super hard, but we haven't seen him in a moment like he was last year, where this is like, this putt is determining win or not. He still dropped, I believe it's his third or fourth, but do you think this course really works with his game? And is this something where we could see him getting contention again? And if so, expecting the same things, or can he right his wrongs?
You know, at the beginning of the year, I was very high on him, really thought there was going to be a big season. It hasn't been the start that I expected. I think this tournament offers an opportunity for a lot of players. Anytime you get to a course like this where there's a little more margin for error. You know, you're not going to have the wind you might have in Kansas and some of the difficulties out there. I think this is an event that a lot of people probably have circled on their calendar, like, okay, I'm going to make my mark. You know, a lot of players will, you'll see a lot of surprising finishes and a lot of names emerge up the leaderboard that you probably don't normally see. And I think this could be that for him. Could be, but I'm definitely not as confident based on the way the season's gone so far. It's not as much of a lock as I would have thought it would be going into the year.
One thing I really like about Aaron Gossage's game with this course is with the low ceiling, having a forehand is a huge advantage, and he has a cannon. He also last year was displaying that roller capability where if he needs to go to the backhand roller, it's there. And he has sneaky backhand distance. I wouldn't put him in the top class of backhand distance, but forehand distance, I would.
He gets really low to the ground on that forehand, and he can keep it under the tree ceilings very well.
And so I like that he has good enough game to go both ways, but that forehand, when he needs to attack a low ceiling, you gotta like him there. So I think he's gonna be able to put himself into a lot of positions to score. It's just, is he gonna be able to convert? I think this, for Aaron Gossage, for a lot of players this is a thrower course. For Aaron Gossage, this is all about putting. He's gonna be able to put it in into the right places. He's gonna be able to throw it well. I don't think that's gonna be a problem. It's just, is he going to be able to convert on the opportunities he gives himself? I wish I had an answer. I don't know. I don't really know what to expect out of him this year. Gannon Burr had a strong finish here last year. He actually was kind of the one towards the end that was pushing Emerson Keith. A bogey on 18 made it where Emerson was able to basically double bogey to win 18, is what he ended up needing there. But finished strong, has historic start to this season. Is this where he gets his second win? Because I think that's the one spot that Gannon has been lacking, is he only has one win.
Yeah, I think he's got a good chance. He's kind of number one now. You know, now that Calvin got his win, him and Ricky, I'd say Ricky's number one on my due for a win list. I'd say Calvin, even though he already has a win, is probably number two just because of how good he's been this year. I expect that it's going to take a really good performance. I think whoever wins this event is going to have to really shoot the lights out. It's not going to be one that you just fall into. You're going to have to push, push, push. There's just too many guys playing good golf that are going to shred this course. And I think that, again, it has a great chance. It's just going to take his best game.
Yeah. Now, I think whenever we talk about Gannon this year, we've been talking about Gannon and Anthony Barella. So Edwin Stats actually put together this statistical comparison between the two players, and it is mighty tight. So I'll just kind of read you down the list here. Obviously, AB has three wins. Gannon has one. But Gannon has the higher event finish so far into this year at 4.6.
That's insane.
As an average.
That is insane.
AB's is only 5.3.
Also crazy.
Also insane.
Helps when you have three ones.
Now their average event score, Gannon also has a slight edge at 22 under average to AB's 21 under. So on average, Gannon's beating AB by one stroke. Pretty crazy there. And then Gannon actually leads AB. He beats him out in birdie rate, fairway hit percentage, circle two greening regulation, scramble, circle one X putting, and circle two putting. The only thing that AB outright beats him in is the park percentage, because circle one greening regulation, they're tied at 47%.
Yeah.
So statistically, though, they're very close, because when I say beats him out, like, we're talking 87% C1X putting to 86% C1X putting, 35% circle two putting to 32% circle two putting. What are we else? Fairway hit 80% to 79%. Birdie rate 49% to 48%. They're the same player.
They're the same player. Yeah, I was gonna say, he's leading. But yeah, I mean, when you look at their seasons, it's, you know, 3-1 wins. It could go both ways. Like, it's just who's put it together at the right time. Their play has both been good enough to win three times. And I think Gannon so far is probably feeling like, oh my gosh, I've got to, like, while I'm playing this golf right now, I've got to get more, at least getting two for the first half of the season. Because I think we're on the halfway mark of the season, if not just crossing over into the second half now. I think a lot of people consider this part like kind of the intro to the second half of the season, because as we start to move our way back east. But I think he's probably thinking to himself, man, one win for a 4.6 average finish is nuts. It's very much like Calvin's season started last year.
Yeah. I really like Gannon out here, but let's talk about AB specifically. AB's one of only three players to come top 10 at all three OTB Opens, the other two being Calvin Heimberg and Aaron Gossage.
Yeah.
Funny enough, those three just kind of, they own this event.
Yeah.
AB, three wins so far. You got to like him at this course.
Yeah.
You got to like a lot of players at this course.
Yeah.
Is he finding number four this weekend?
Very good chance. He's going to be super hard to beat. I think that he's my course record guy. I think that he could be the one to shoot the, you know, you see we have from Edwin, the, you know, best rounds. We got the Eagle McMahon 13 under 2021. I could see the 14 under from AB. I could see it. I don't know if he's going to put together an entire tournament, but I think because of the fact that he's going to come out really, really hot at least once or twice, he's going to be tough to stop. And if he's on his game, you know, you have to think he could be the favorite.
I do. I mean, who wouldn't like?
Yeah,
like basically,
if you see all that green grass right now, and you have AB is there, it's hard not to like him.
If you're looking at a course, and you're like, oh, is there open space? Oh, are there 18 baskets? I gotta like AB.
Yeah,
like, that's basically where we're at, and yeah. That's basically what this course is. Now, you did mention Eagle McMahon, so we gotta talk here because he struggled here a little bit last year in 2023. I think he came in 55th, but he won it in 2021 after his 90th place, I believe it was, Champions Cup debut on his injury return. What are the expectations as we come into OTB Open?
I think really high, at least on my end. I think that round one is going to be huge because with the hugely increased margin for error he's going to have off the tee, going from Northwood to this, he has a chance to gain a lot of confidence in his bag and in his competitive ability with his new setup. And I think if he comes out round one and can shoot a score that keeps him in the tournament, 6, 7, 8 under, whatever it might be, he's going to be dangerous for this event. I think that there's a really high chance that this could be like the, oh, Eagle's back. Like, that was fast. I think that the Champions Cup thing was very, very misleading.
Yeah, no, I definitely agree. Returning from injury to Northwood Black,
That's a nightmare with a new bag.
Worst case scenario. yeah, worst case scenario. I do also agree that I think round one decides this tournament for Eagle.
Yeah.
Not necessarily win or lose, but are we talking top 20 or outside of the top 50?
Right.
I think round one is the deciding factor for that, because if he comes out and it's, I'll put the line at 7 under or better. If Eagle comes out 7 under or better, he's going to be in contention, I think. If he comes out, you know, somewhat flat and puts off like a 3 under or 2 under, I think his confidence will be a little iffy. And I think he might find it by the end of the tournament, but it might be too little too late.
Because you have to remember, with a guy like Eagle who might still be trying to figure out his bag, if he shoots a good round one, and as long as the conditions don't change dramatically, he's got his game plan.
Yeah.
So he knows what discs he needs to throw. Now he just needs to do it again or do it slightly better. You know, that's the thing about this, that you know, about tournament disc golf, is if you play round one well and you've got the same conditions tomorrow, your game plan's locked in. And I don't think with Eagle many people are doubting his arm talent.
No.
You know, it's mostly this kind of shakiness and uncertainty. So if he can lock in a game plan that he likes round one and shoot well, that's going to be tough to compete with.
Where are you putting him? Like, where are you saying, a top 10, top 15, top 20? Where do you think he's finishing?
Top three.
You put him in your top three?
Yeah.
Wow. My expectations are lower. I think top 20. I think a top 20 is a win for Eagle. I think he's capable of it. I mean, will I be surprised if he puts himself in it? Absolutely not.
I definitely am taking a stab, but it's like, yeah, I would be 0% shocked if he is in the top three in this tournament.
No.
Like, it would not surprise me at all.
No, not at all. Top 20 is what I'm expecting. Like, if I see Eagle at like 12th, I'm like, yep, that makes perfect sense. Yeah. Top three would be like, if Eagle gets a top three here, the rest of the season is going to get very interesting, because then
you have to start tossing
new competitor back
in.
You got now you have Calvin, AB, Gannon, Ricky, Eagle, and who knows who else. So things definitely get interesting. One of the guys who probably deserves to be on the list I just said, but is still looking for his first win this season, is Ricky Wysocki. Historically, he's played pretty good out here. He's played two events, but with that past player performance average score, he's only 0.2 off the lead of Calvin Heimberg. Calvin's averaging 20.7 for this event under par. Ricky's averaging 20.5 average score for this event, but his top finish is only fourth place. What do you think about his game, this course, and how it could combine for his first win of the season?
Yeah, I'm going to say the same thing that I kind of said about Calvin before he was able to grab his win, which is Ricky has to come out and be ruthless. He has to put his foot to the gas, and he has to just go out and take it. You know, Calvin was getting into places where he wasn't attacking enough in the final round, and then finally he was able to do that and just push everybody aside and get his win. And I think Rick, at this point in the season, he's playing too good of golf to not have a win. I know it's tough to grab one these days, but he needs to just come out, put his foot on the gas, and go out and take one and remind people that he's Ricky Wysocki, and not try and jockey around with people, because I think the winner of this event is going to sprint to the finish line. I do not think it's the kind of event that you have time to play for positioning and jockey around. I think you really just need to get out the gates hot and stay hot and really just leave the competition in the dust.
Yeah, I think one of the reasons I like Ricky out here is the same reason I like Aaron Gossage out here, which is that forehand. I think that forehand is a saving grace for a lot of players and players who have it, because Ricky has a more than adequate backhand, but his forehand's elite level. And being able to have that off the tee really just takes that low ceiling stress level way down. because it's just so much easier to control. You're looking at your gap the whole time, and being able to pump that out there where some guys are getting their backhand is being able to access different landing zones. With that being said, I didn't put him in my top three. I just think Ricky is struggling a little bit this season. I think he's having a phenomenal start to the season for anyone but Rick, because Ricky has kind of turned himself into the Calvin Heimberg, Paul McBeth, where like greatness is the expectation. Mm-hmm. Anything below that is just subpar. Yeah. I think that's where my expectation is for Rick. And the fact that we've come into the season this far, I know he's had a great start, but that win missing is starting to have me doubt. I thought Dynamic Disc Open was going to be his weekend. It wasn't. I think I like other players too much here to put this as Ricky's weekend. I would be shocked if he went the entire season without a win. I think he's going to be able to get himself into contention and win at least one, probably two or three by the end of the season. It wouldn't surprise me if out of nowhere Ricky was in talks for player of the year by the end of this whole thing. But I don't personally think this is the weekend he turns it around. But, you know, we've said that about a lot of players and proven wrong a lot.
I mean, when AB, Calvin, and Gannon are hogging the leaderboard the way they are, it's just tough.
So let's talk Calvin here. Finally, we have Calvin. He's coming off the win at DDO.
Yeah.
And could really push the narrative of, like, he's the guy. Because now that win kind of is off his chest. It went a whole calendar year.
Yeah.
He stayed, basically lived in the top five with, like, two blips on his radar during that calendar year. Now, boom, win there. I don't know how big of a momentum guy Calvin is, but do you like his game in this course? I've asked that about every player, I feel like. But do you like him coming into here off the win?
Yeah, I think, you know, he'll be as scary as he always is. I think, you know, earlier this year, we saw a guy in AB finally get a win off his chest. Bit different scenario, but similar idea. Gets the win off his chest, alleviates some pressure, and proceeds to explode over the next few weeks and grab two more. And I think that that is certainly a powerful effect. Calvin will be feeling that, knowing that he is a successful player at this event, and that, you know, he's got that win out of the way. He's now right there, you know, with all the other guys. And I expect him to be as dangerous as he is anywhere.
My only question around Calvin Heimberg is what I've talked about with Aaron, what I talked about with Ricky. The forehand's not here.
It's true. Yeah, he's going to have to rely on different shots. And, you know, he's able to make up for it pretty effectively. It's just going to be, you know, is the roller working out for him? What kind of shots is he going to try to select to make up for that? But that is kind of the one thing you can kind of hold on to right now with Calvin, is be a little tentative, because it's like, well, if it kind of ends up being one of those forehand events, that is going to hurt.
Well, the good news is when you have a low ceiling and you don't have a forehand, what you better have a lot of times is that low punching force over backhand that's going to flex. And that is what Calvin is phenomenal at. So where he is missing the forehand that he is normally capable of, I still really like him out here.
Yeah.
He has all the control in the world over his discs. You know, when his putter gets hot, it gets hot. And I personally do think that getting that win is going to be an unlock for him, where there is no more narrative. Calvin Heimberg is just Calvin again.
Well, there's a narrative. He has won a major.
He hasn't won a major, but this isn't a major weekend. So there's no narrative.
2025 Champions Cup narrative.
No major, no storyline for this weekend.
Yeah.
Like I'm saying, that storyline's gone. He can put it to bed. He's going into this free and clear.
Yeah.
That could be a very dangerous person. So now on the FPO side, we're still missing the European players. So no Kristen Tatar, no Evelina.
It's sparse.
No Henna. And unfortunately, I really like this course for a lot of their games.
Oh, certainly.
But that opens this thing wide open.
I don't even know if I saw Holland's name on there.
I don't know. I didn't look. I put her in my top three just by nature.
I looked at the you might have missed
it's not locked in yet.
I looked at the tee times. I'll double check.
You might have just given me a freebie. You might have just saved me. You shouldn't have said it.
I shouldn't have said anything.
But Paige Pierce last year took this thing down. Since then, a lot has happened, and Paige is not the player she once was.
Yeah.
Good vibes, OTB, anything that can save this? No?
No.
Just no chance.
I'm just not willing to do it, you know? Because like I saw the name there, and I was kind of like, oh, there's nobody there. But it's like, she just doesn't play good.
Here's what I'm saying.
It's not about the competition with Paige. It's not about, well, there's Kristen and Mitt. No, she's just not playing well.
If you're a Paige Pierce fan.
Oh, she's there. She just has a really early tee time.
Okay, good. If you're a Paige Pierce fan, I think this is your one shining hope here, is that Kristen Tatar just did something Paige Pierce has never done. She became 1,000 rated. That is going to do one of two things, in my opinion. That is either going to awake the fierce competitor that had passion and drive that we used to see out of Paige Pierce, or it is going to farther crumble her into a player that we just aren't going to be talking about a few years from now. I think those are kind of the two paths ahead.
Yeah, I'll take C. It doesn't affect her at all. She just doesn't care.
Well, that was B. It just kind of continues to...
Yeah. Oh, okay. I missed B. Sorry. I blanked on passion and drive.
Yeah. Because, look, what I want to see is I want to see the Paige Pierce that all she cared about was winning. And that's what I want as a fan of the sport. I understand that, you know, that's not what Paige wants and that Paige is probably in a much better spot for a lot of other stuff. But... Now when it comes to being a fan of the sport and what I want to watch on the disc golf course, I want the Paige Pierce that's like, win or go home, pedal to the metal.
Yeah.
And that's what it's going to take for Paige to get back to where Paige was.
It would be so exciting to watch Paige Pierce like duel somebody down the stretch. Like I would be super pumped to watch.
And I think a lot of times it does take something to reignite that. Paige got the 996 once.
Yeah.
She almost tasted it.
Almost.
Kristen Tatar, now, I mean, everyone's calling Kristen the GOAT right now.
My goat.
That's got to be upsetting if you're Paige Pierce. And like I said, this could be a turning point where Paige might come out this weekend hungry like a dog and chase this thing down. With that being said, she's not in my top three. I don't know. A player who is in my top three is Owen Scoggins. Had a really solid performance out here last year.
Yeah.
Do you think this course just suits her game, or what are you about to see?
Well, I'm not. If I remember correctly, last year we saw a similar thing where the field was weakened, and I think right now in a weak field, Owen and Missy, like, you just got to love them, right? Like, that, those are two players where week in and week out, you have to play well to beat them because they're very consistent. They're probably, you know, two of the most consistent players in the FPO division. So if you take away many of the threatening winners of the field, it gives them a real easy trip to the top five. Very easy. So, yeah, I like Owen at this course.
I like Owen for the main reason being her forehand. That chop over forehand that she is with is great on low ceilings.
Oh, yeah.
Because I think that could be Missy's downfall out here is that,
interesting.
That
yeah.
flip up backhand. A lot of times you do want a little bit of a ceiling. As someone who throws it, if you pull it a little bit, a lot of times your disc is going up.
There's a very distinct, you know, when you're throwing a hyzer, right, your arm is traveling down to up, you know, the flat force over backhand, especially with Anheuser, your arm is traveling down. So, you know, your late release and your miss usually is you pull the disc downwards. Yeah, that hyzer, it's tough to keep those low. That's a real skill to keep that disc out in front of you and keep it low. So that'll be interesting to watch with her
game. Holland Hanley, however, I do think is a really solid competitor out here. I think that she has the entire game that she needs. It's just, can she put it all together this weekend? I do think Missy, Holland, Owen are kind of the three. Haley King obviously showed some promise at DDO. We'll see if she can put it together again. I'm not willing to be hurt by the Haley King train yet again. I need a few more weeks of Haley King performance before I'm like, Haley's throwing her name in the hat.
Fair point.
Going into predictions, point standing, I'm at 42. Trevor is at 55. Coming into this weekend, Trevor, kick it off. Who's your MPO top three?
MPO top three. I'm going to give Gannon Burr the win. I think he's going to slightly beat, just barely edge out Anthony Barella. And then third place, I alluded to before, Eagle McMahon. I think this is where he finally throws his hat into the ring.
All right. I have Gannon winning as well. I have AB in second as well. I just put Calvin Heimberg in third.
Chance that gains points on
I went with the safe one. You went with the risky one.
Yeah.
You know, solid chance that both of us get the exact same amount of points.
Yeah.
Now, on FPO, I have Owen Scoggins taking this down. I do think that forehand is going to be the deciding factor. I put Holland Hanley in second, and I put Missy in third solely because I wanted those three in my top three, and I think Missy's the least likely to win of those three. But, yeah.
I took a bit of a bolder pick. I did pick Missy to win, second, I'm going to take Owen. And third, kind of similar to MPO, I think I'm going to go with Ella Hansen here.
Okay.
Because I think that back over to the West Coast, I feel like she's going to find a little spark at some point in the season, I feel like. And I think this is the tournament.
All right.
I think Ella Hansen plays well this event.
I like it. So there's some chances for some point swings here. Last but not least, we have the Dark Horse pick. Who do you have?
Going with Gavin Rathbun. Been playing really well this season. 15 under last year at the event. Played pretty solid. So, yeah.
Who's your daddy? Emmer Daddy. Give it to me.
Sure is.
I'm going with Emerson Keith. Won last year. 39th in the PDGA World Rankings right now.
It's a good value.
You know, great value.
Great value.
Even Walmart brand.
Oh, my.
I think that might just That might be a great dark horse pick, or it might be an absolute flop and terrible.
Well, at least he's playing, because last week my dark horse pick wasn't even playing the tournament.
Yeah, it was, I might have got
shout out Mr. Hammers
with Kevin Jones. I might have got the lowest finish dark
like
horse
80th.
Win of all time.
It's probably up there.
It's got to be close.
We've had pretty good picks this year.
We had to do Edwin, do like a reverse stat look at that. Good luck with that one. But all right, get out, watch some disc golf. Tune in on Jomez. Tune in on DGN or wherever, however you prefer to watch disc golf. And we'll be back on Monday to recap all of that, react to the Champions Cup news, react to Christian Notar being 1,000 rated, and a bunch of other storylines. You're not going to want to miss that episode coming on Monday. We'll talk to you then.